The Weekend Podcast on Vox Markets with Justin, Peter and Steve. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
It's the Weekend Podcast. It's the Weekend Podcast, of course, and it's the Weekend Podcast. I say it three times, so good you heard it twice. What song was that? New York, New York, so good they say it twice. They don't generally, though, do they? They just say it once, New York. Where are you from? New York, New York. Really? Yes. It's so good they say it twice. Anyway, Pete, Steve, you're all right, lads?
Yes, hello.
Yeah, good morning.
Good morning.
Good weekend, even. Good weekend.
Good weekend to you, sir.
That's not really a phrase, is it?
Really. Let's start cracking that out there for 2019. Good weekend to you, sir.
Good weekend.
I think it's a new saying of 2019, when you
put your jodhpurs on and go for a walk in the morning with your dogs and you're hunting dogs, Dave, say, good morning, good weekend, you sir. Good weekend. Yeah. Good hunting weekend, sir. Mm. I'm just thinking about... should we do micro at the start or macro? Because I've got a bit of macro stuff I want to chat about, you know, economies or some of that. And because people, we've had a little bounce in the markets, haven't we? You know, a little bounce. I'm thinking. This is what I'm thinking. It's only opinion, of course. May not be right. I still think we're in a bear market. Now, bear markets have fantastic rallies, amazing rallies, and this is why no one ever sees a recession coming or a downturn coming, because they're almost, you know, lulled into a false sense of security that we are back in the bull. We're back on the bull, right in the bull. And people started reinvesting, you know? And then all of a sudden, the bear starts to show his head. It's really, you know, a bear dressed as a bull in wolf's clothing. It takes his, stands up, takes his bull costume off. And, ha-ha! You thought it was the bull! I'm the bear! And then we go down again further. And like I say, the stock market goes up the steps, down the escalator. You know, so I do think, looking at economic, this is the bigger, you know, picture in the background, economic indicators. One of them this week was massive, I think. Car sales in China. Now, China is the biggest, fastest growing economy in the world. It consumes half of the world's economies, critical economy like copper and nickel and coal and all this kind of stuff, right? Steel, cement, massive. You know, building, you know, sort of ghost factories, ghost towns, all these zombie towns and cities. But anyway, car sales in China, the world's biggest vehicle market. So understand that. The biggest vehicle, so, you know, 1.5 billion people there. They're all driving, even the kids. If they're not on bicycles, have seen their first annual fall, the sales, first annual fall in 20 years. That's a big number. That's a massive number. They haven't fallen in 20 years, and they have this year. Now, they're still saying their economy is going to get hit 6%. Last year, it was like 6.5%. So down 0.5% is massive, you know? And so they're saying now they're struggling to get 6%. So they're stimulating the banks. They're saying that they don't have to hold capital reserves as much as the banks. As they're lowering the amount of money they have to hold, so they can loan more money. But that makes it a bit more, you know, sort of risky, really, as an economy, because the banks don't have as much capital. So if their thing goes wrong, I mean, there's a bit different to China, because they can stimulate when they want. So I think that's a worry. You know, that's the biggest economy in the world. Second biggest economy in the world. Going to be the biggest economy, but it's the biggest grower, you know, in the world. So also in Europe, the biggest economy, Germany, industrial output unexpectedly fell in November for the third consecutive month, and you know, adding to signs, Europe's largest economy shifted into a lower gear. And this and people saying they could be going into recession, Germany. So all these talk about, you know, oh, UK will be in problems, Germany is suffering. And that's the biggest car market they are a big export market. You know, the BMW, fair play, the Germans, they make some good cars, don't they?
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, you got your BMs, you got your Mercs, you got your, what's the other one?
Audis.
Yeah, those three there, you know. God, they're good.
Porsche are quite good as well.
Porsche, yeah, they don't mess around, the German engineers, they know what they're doing. We can make a car, you know, we know how to make cars. That's German, that one.
Right.
France, which is second biggest economy. French France.
Their cars are rubbish,
it's very. The French haven't got a clue, have they? They're like next door to Germany. They haven't got a clue. They end up the Citroën and Peugeot. Absolute nonsense. They're tin pots. But anyway, they're private sector business. They haven't got a clue to do music either. They just copy us. I went to France, right? I spent time working in France. And literally, the music channels they had back then, most of them were showing. All the French do is like ballads, black and white video ballads. That's all they do, right? Singing. all of them boring. And then all of a sudden you have
this was about 50 years ago though.
Every other song is still has the French had a hit over here in America for like how long? Joe Le Taxi was the last one. Joe Le Taxi. Yeah, but he uses British people to sing. But I mean, Joe Le Taxi, that was the last one.
Right.
And that taxi was probably a Citroen. Rubbish taxi. Yeah.
Some Peugeots are built in Britain, aren't they? But anyway, yeah.
But anyway, do you know what? Every other song was like a British hit or American hit, pretty much British. But then they sort of banned it. They put a cultural ban on not only sort of songs on the radio. That's a French, you know, they're trying to stop. That's the way culture it evolves. It's a breathing thing. They also try to ban the word Le Weekend and sort of British phrases. Ridiculous. Anyway, French private sector business contracted, right?
Hello to all our French listeners.
Yeah, French.
Bonjour.
They wouldn't understand hello because they banned it. French private sector business activity contracted for the first time in 2.5 years in France. So, yeah. You know, and people go on. I don't want to turn this into a Brexit rant, right? But UK is not doing so well. I mean, while our economy slowed for the first time in 3 months in November for the last 6 months, so it slowed last 3 months to 0.3%. It's still growing, you know? Our British new car sales fell fastest rate since 2008. That's worrying. 10 years our car sales last year fell. Our retailers suffered the worst Christmas in 2008. These are economic indicators you can't ignore, you know? America's a bit different. They're still doing quite well because they're largely a consumer-driven economy. They're pretty much self-sufficient. They only import from China, so they do import, but I think 70-75% of the economy is consumer-driven, and obviously now they have the oil and gas, because shale and all that. But they are showing signs of slowing down as well. Japan's in issues. Do you know what the unemployment rates in Europe? Everyone's going about Europe, saying, we need to be part of Europe. Do you know the unemployment rates in Europe? We are way below the average unemployment rate. So 6.9% is the unemployment rate in Europe. We're at 4.1%. Greece has 18.6% unemployment. Yeah, Spain, 14.7%. Italy, 10.5%. France, 9.3% unemployment. We're half of France.
So have you memorised all these stats?
Yeah, all of them. So what I'll say is, I just want to bring it on to, I mean, I don't know if you heard the governor of Port of Calais this week talking about there's no problems. If there's no deal, there's no problems with stuff coming in. We're allowed to, by that's going out. Coming in, we're allowed to let in what we want. You know, you get the regular sort of businesses coming. We're allowed, there's not many, people go, we're not going to get any food. We're going to be living on water. And that, and we come, and that'll be imported. So, no, we can let in what we want. What are you talking about? It's ridiculous. Why are people saying this? I don't understand this. And also, let me just give one other thing. What I'm annoyed about the deal that May's come up with, $39 billion, is Steve, you imagine your business, right? So you trade, you do videos for someone. Let's say you do videos on a regular basis, right? You're doing well. They enjoy your videos. They enjoy the price. You enjoy doing them. You get the money and all that stuff. And all of a sudden, they say to you, oh, by the way, from now on in, we're going to take a one-off payment off you of $10,000, all right, to do videos for us. So what? But you pay me. No, but that's to trade with us, you know. It's not the way I'm out. Do you like the videos, yeah? Do you like the price of charge, yeah? What's the problem then? No, that's the way it works. You just said, well, you know, sod you, I'm going somewhere else. Wouldn't you? That's the way it's working for you. $39 billion. You want our trade. We want your trade. Why are we charging us $39 billion? It's ridiculous.
I don't think my video business is probably on a par to the government trading with the rest of the world.
The concept is very similar.
Don't put yourself down, Steve.
No, exactly. The concept is very similar, so there's no problem with trade coming in and out. There's no problem with that. And also, our the UK currency is taking such a knock now. We're very competitive, our exports, and any sort of tariffs there will be wiped out by the currency exchanges anyway. So it's no worry. Do you know what? I honestly think we'll look back on this. It's not a Brexit rant as a lever. I'm just saying I think we'll look back on this in 5 years' time and think it's been a big deal about nothing. You know, we'll just carry on, trade will evolve.
Well, I think that, there's something you said, a lot of things, be it Millennium Bug, be it, I don't know, GDPR, whatever, all those sort of things, all end up kind of being a flash in the pan, nothing really. The only thing I would say is Brexit is kind of the biggest thing for a few generations, really.
Yeah. And also, it's something for the news to latch onto and talk about. It's,
well, I know, but it is fundamentally quite a very big thing.
We'll be talking about
But in a way, that's good news that's the kind of way it will probably pan out, though, because it's been overhyped, and as you said, it's probably been kind of gone into the stock market already, isn't it?
And that's what I'm saying. That's it, Steve. That's it. You're hitting the nail on the head, boy. Yeah, so that's what I'm saying. I think largely now, I do think we're going to have a dodgy year, maybe 2020 would be worse, but I think we've had a big fall, and I think we're in for a big bounce. It's priced in. I think the uncertainty of what's happening here is priced in, you know, and for a while. But I do think we're going to have a dodgy-ish end of
Can I just step back before the start of your rant? When you're saying
it wasn't a rant, really, was it? It was more of a discussion.
It was a healthy discussion, yeah. A one-sided healthy discussion.
Yeah, very healthy.
Where you were saying we're still in a bear market, what do you mean by that? Like, are we actually in the bear market?
Well, don't
bear markets last for 13 months or something on average?
Welcome to the bear market. You can buy any bear you want. I just sell anything else. Just bears, that's all. Yeah. You can have big brown ones or slightly brown ones, but not as big. So a technical bear market is when a stock market or indices, for example, drops 20% below a recent high. And we've done that on several of the indices in America. They lead the world pretty much, you know. But we're now bouncing back out of a bear market. The bounce we've had... But I just think it's a technical thing. I mean, obviously these figures are arbitrary. You can't just put an exact round figure of 20% on it. It's about the economy before. And to a certain extent, you know, the stock markets, the spook of the stock markets can prevent people from investing, which will, you know, it's a self-fueling sort of situation where people will stop investing because of the volatility. And that will lead on to a worse economy. So I think, you know... is it going to be a deep, dark recession? Or I have no idea how much the slowdown is happening. I just think China's quite worrying. America's not so worrying. But there are other economies around, like Germany, all that stuff. Is it temporary? I don't know. I mean, that's why, I'm focusing... That's what I'm saying. Maybe too quickly. I mean, I'm a bit ahead of the curve here. But I'm repositioning and pivoting out of companies that I think will be leveraged to global growth, because I think global growth is slowing down. I keep saying this. I'm looking for companies that are cash generative. You know, and or will be or need no money until they get to cash generation. A good example of that. Did you hear, by the way, James from Bidstack? Now, it's not, you know, they've had no news, or they've had news, but they haven't done any much PR, you know. I signed up a deal with Codemasters recently, which is, you know, a BAFTA award winning games maker, Dirt Rally, and all that stuff. James came on the podcast first time yesterday, which I'm glad, because I've been chatting with him on LinkedIn and stuff, and he said, and fair play, he said, listen, we don't want to come on the podcast and just chat about no news, we have to have some news. So they did a year end trading update, and the stock dropped 10%, over 10% on that
year. I saw that.
RNS came out, it dropped over 10%. Now the update was very good. They've signed with 9 games, right? They're, you know, some very big games as well. Now they hit their first target for a year target of 300 grand, 300K. People say, well, this is a £9 million company. That's not a lot. Well, hang on. They've been trading for 4 months, you know?
Yeah.
They've only started monetizing one asset in November. That's Football Manager 19. They did data trials on Football Manager 18, but wasn't sort of monetizing it massively. Just beta trials on it, and they did charge some companies, I think, they advertised on it. But... didn't do it properly, and that the main launch was in November with FM Manager 19. And so they hit 300,000, they hit what their broker said they would do within a month, pretty much, and yet the share price took a knock. And I thought, well, hang on a sec, look at what they've done. Mm-hmm. They've not fully monetized one asset, they've hit the target, they've got 8 other assets. Even on FM 19, I don't think they had complete fill rates on all the ads, you know, I don't think they're all full. So.
Right.
I think that's... And James said to me, this is an offshoot, when we were chatting about the podcast, I said, well, good, nice update, James. And he said to me, the first thing he said, do you know what? I'm more... They've got targets now for this year, 5.9 million revenue, and next year, 20 million, right? And he said to me, one of the first... You could hear the relief in his voice. He said, do you know what, mate? He said, I was more worried about hitting this 300,000 target than I am about hitting this year's 5.9 million target. I said, why? He said, because we had to get all the systems up in place, our sales teams up to get going, it just, you know, getting the business going and then generating money within such a short period of time. I know we could do it, but it's just that now the system's in place and we have, you know, 9 contracts with games, I know now it's going to be a lot easier, you know, or it's not going to be as hard to get that target for this year, which is, you know, almost 6 million. And it is. You imagine someone saying to you, right, your business start, you're listed, go. You've got, a couple of months to get to this target. You go, well, hang on a sec. I've just got a new sales team. I'm getting other people. We're getting systems in place. So that was the hardest thing for him. But I think that chatting to him is massive potential here. And like you said, you know, I did ask him, I said, why, you know, why hasn't other people done this? And he said, well, another company did do this several years back, I think early 2000s or mid-2000s. And it was taken out by Microsoft for 180 or something, 160 million something. You know, so Microsoft bought them. But he said also, but then it was shut down by Microsoft. I said, because they're only on one platform anyway, Microsoft's Xbox, and it wasn't like us. But because at the time, tech has changed massively. You know, broadband speeds are faster now, we're 10 years on. He said, there's more mobile gaming. The gaming industry has gone massive, even bigger. You know, it's proliferated, it's exponential growth has had. So he said, you know, when we started, we couldn't believe people weren't doing this. We said, we are now, the revenue we've earned from this has proved the concept to me, and the amount of inbound interest we're getting from publishers, from advertisers, and from generally from people, he said, not really related to gaming, but big branded companies who want to get involved. And I thought, wow, this could be big, actually. Yeah. So I did that video a while back, didn't I, ARC, A-R-C, and that's AIM, Reiteration, and Confirmation. We haven't had confirmation yet, and I think, with anything, and I've come down to this now, I'm more wary of updates, and I'm just basing more stuff off figures now, and I'll just literally say, I'm looking for, you know, companies generating cash, and I'm just going to rely on figures. So it doesn't matter what a company says, you know, or what they do in an interview, it has to come down to the figures. Are they delivering? So as yet, you know, it's still a concept, a semi-proven, but I like it, and it's heading in the right direction. So I did buy some more on that dip, on that 10%. And anyway, it ended up, when people listen to the podcast, it ended up by, what did it end up by yesterday? It was up, so it was down 10% at the start on that RS. So yeah, but that's the power of spoken word against just dry RNS text, isn't it? Because you get a dry RNS text, and like, you know, worded in an odd way, and yeah, up 2.1%. So that was basically a rise from the bottom there of 12%. So he came on and explained the RNS and where they were, and people really understood that. And they had
so here's a question: do you know what RNS is? That we all know that they're written really badly and just hard to understand most of the time.
They're not in English, are they?
Do they have to be written like that? Is there like a certain like rule within the industry that has to be done that? Or
you got a nomad.
Yeah, they get sent back. Not confusing enough.
Honestly, but do you know what? It's amazing. I've had CEOs being so frustrated what they can and can't say. You know, so they can't be forward-looking, and essentially they've got to be super safe. They can't mislead people anyway in investing when something. So they've got to be super safe and just deliver on fact. And they mustn't. And we're on a podcast, you can explain it a bit more, give it more colour, and say what's happening actually, which is not misleading. On an RNS, you can't. It's a legal document, you know. So you can't.
So you can write an RNS like the way you talk about it on the podcast.
Well, not really, because you could say, listen, you can't say we're getting lots of interest, because that is, people say, well, how much interest? You know, I mean, it's essentially a difference between a human and a robot, isn't it? You know, it's like you can be human. If you say, Steve, if you say to me, you know, our business is looking up and getting lots of interest here, you know, it's not really fact, is it? Even though you're getting a lot more interest, a lot more calls, and people contacting you, and so even though you think you know that will translate into good business, you can't really put that in RNS because it's not fact, and so you may mislead people. But, you know, but it's a human thing to say. I think I'm quite buoyant. The business is quite good at the moment, you know. So I just think it's a difference between being a human and non-human. RNS is not human. I have to read RNSs. I've been reading RNSs for, you know, I don't know how many years, and I still have to reread and reread and reread to understand what they're talking about. You know, I have no idea. So people listen to the podcast and realise there's a massive potential, and in fact, they've achieved a lot, a heck of a lot. Bidstack have achieved a heck of a lot in a short space of time. And I think now the positions, the systems are in place, the contracts are in place to start money. They've monetized nothing of what they've got, the potential of what they are, can monetize. You know, that's going to happen this year. Starting to happen this year, and I think they'll generally, you know, gradually gain more traction as the time goes on, you know. So,
but is that their revenue mostly will be through it's just through ad revenue for selling to media owners? It's like it's not actually pay per click or anything like that. It's not actually,
no, it's not pay per click, no, it's
purely
in-game,
display advertising.
Yeah.
So it's up to their ability to sell that advertising space. That's where the revenue will come from.
Yeah, well, they are linked. No, it's not, they don't have to sell it. So they are linked to, there's lots of advertising platforms obviously set
up.
Their technology is automatic. So if someone goes in, if you're an advertiser, for example, and you are, you know, you hooked up to one of these platforms, supply side platforms, for example, and you say, right, I want to spend some media advertising on internet, on web, and and basically you would just click, okay, I want to hit a, you know, 18 to 25-year-old guys in, you know, northeast there, and what's the most effective way of hitting those? So they'll just obviously do the normal web advertisement. But then now the option is to select the games, which before wasn't pretty much there, you know. So you'll have the normal sort of website adverts and the click-throughs, but now it's games adverts. So you realise a lot of guys playing games, and they're not being serviced. As I'm saying, it's a massive industry. It's bigger than, you know, movies, video, and streaming combined. But yet, it's pretty much underserved by advertising. You know, in every other part of these industries, the advertising, you know, maximum amount of advertising is served to them. But
so Bidstack platform or Bidstack technology is then available to media buyers, so ad agencies and whatever.
And
then Bidstack are getting a cut, obviously, of every.
Yes. So the publisher of games are getting revenue they never get.
Yeah. Right.
And obviously the media buyers are hitting an audience that could never hit before, which is a massive gaming audience, you know. So
yeah,
and they've got and people say, why don't publishers, why don't games people do this? And the thing is, because if you're a games publisher, I don't know how many games you're publishing, but essentially you're representing one or two games probably. Bidstack obviously agnostic; they represent lots of different games, lots of different publishers, and they're brand agnostic. So, but also they've got the tech, and also you have to bring someone in house, start developing that tech. What's the point?
Oh, yeah.
For a publisher, you can just say, as a company over here, it doesn't cost us. They just take a cut of what we generate, so it doesn't cost us anything. And also, they've got, you know, exclusive contracts with the publisher, so no one else can do that, you know. So for 3-4, so they can build up their inventory and their contacts in 3-4 years, and no one else can actually, you know. So no one else now can do a contract like that with Football Manager, you know, with Codemasters. No one else can do the contract. So they've got the exclusivity on that. So if someone does jump in the market, like James did say on the podcast, I expect Me Too companies to jump in and try and do this, but that's why we're signing exclusive contracts. So they can't do it with these certain companies for, you know, up to 3 years, as contracts are. So in that time.
But then, so that's one thing to have those contracts, but then it's getting the media buyers to actually be even aware of the system and to start using the system.
Well, that's what he said. At the moment, a media buyer will go on and select a geographic region, an age of a person and a sex of a person, and they don't care where it goes, pretty much. And that will be allocated to gaming now. He said, but soon we are putting in place systems where they can actually select gaming specifically, you know? And so that will give it a segment on itself, and that's happening right now. So at the moment, you can buy a generic web-based ad, you can target an age group and a geographic location, but you can't say, I want it on Facebook. I mean, you can say now, I want it on Facebook or Twitter, but you can't say, I want it in gaming specifically. But now that's happening. The Bidstack actually putting these systems in place where people can actually select gaming specifically to target gamers, you know, so you could target gamers with new games, for example, or new whatever. So be really specific. anyway, that was okay. I quite like Bidstack. It's still early days, you know, it's still early days of Bidstack. I said, so, you know, you apply your risk to that and your exposure to that company as is the risk. So I did a video last week. Did you see Wahey Education?
I haven't watched that video. Sorry, no.
Oh, thanks, Dad.
Steve must have, probably.
Steve,
been
taking notes, probably.
Steve? I missed out on that one. Yeah. Just that one, though, obviously. That one.
Thanks for that, Steve.
Yeah. I'll catch up this weekend.
Several thousand people have watched it, apart from you guys, you know? I say thousand.
Right, sorry. That's was it any good?
Oh, it's cracking, yeah. One of the hits of the year, to be honest.
Really?
No, but I'm looking at cash generative businesses, right? And of the few I've looked at recently, you know, look at Brave Bison, Tuple, Bidstack, Way Education, and a couple of others, of course. They, to me, have confirmed that they are generating cash. So the last set of results, right, they said they lost. So basically, they're an online educator. And they do everything from online education is going up. I mean, it's growing a market. And they do everything from, you know, O-levels, A-levels to, you know, courses beyond that. What do you call that? Courses that not in school?
Tertiary
or vocational stuff like that. All that kind of stuff, anyway. But the turnover increased 72% last year, right? And they're valued at, 11 million. So they got 4 million in cash. So there we go. We got nice cash there. But they did make a loss last year, a small loss. That's not what it was. It wasn't a big loss, so they got plenty of. But the year before, they made a profit. The reason why they made a loss last year, 230 grand, that's all. So they got 4 million. because they're expanding, and they're expanding in China and Nigeria. Like the share price is taking a hit because there's a delay on China. So it looks like it's going ahead, but starting off on 50 classes in China. But as always, there's regulatory problems and issues in China, because obviously they're a communist country, and you've got to be very careful with your IP in China. So it's been taking longer than... but they don't need that anyway. This year, they've said... And what I liked is, there's a statement in their finals that said, we had 4.2 million in cash at the end of the year, which has increased since. So, what does that mean? Steve, if you got cash at the end of the year, you're trading and it's increased since, what does that mean?
You're on profit. I don't, what do you mean?
That's what I'm asking
you. Money,
you
think.
That's money, yeah. I don't know. Money. Mm-hmm. Well, if it's increased, that means you're generating cash, isn't it? If you haven't raised any money, which they haven't, that means you are, you know, generating cash. So, since the year end, that means that after they've released the results, their cash balance has increased. So that says to me, they're cash generative. And they only lost money in this financial year to the 31st of August 2018. They only lost money because they spent more on marketing and also more on their sort of ventures in Nigeria and China. But they say, encouraging start of the current year, turnover expected to grow significantly again in the current year. This is a company expanding about 70% a year. Their core business, this is via some acquisitions, but their core business is expanding by 20% a year. So they're expanding, yes, they're small, they've got a cash balance, and that's growing. So they're cash generative, and listen, if they say, even without China, even without Nigeria, even without the Middle East, which they are expanding into, this company, turnover expected to grow significantly, and cash is going up. But so even without those, with those, it's a bonus, and that's blue sky. So if they land, and I think it's not a problem with Nigeria, that's happening. I looked into the stats in Nigeria. Do you know anything about Nigeria?
Yeah, loads.
Tell me all about it, Peter. Nigeria.
It's a country in West Africa.
Yes. Yes.
The capital of which is Nigeria? No. Is it?
It's not. No, the capital is Nigel.
No, that's it. The capital is Nigel.
Welcome to Nigel. It's the capital.
It has many natural landmarks and wildlife reserves, protected areas such as Cross River National Park and Yakari National Park have waterfalls, dense rainforests, savannah, and rare primate habitats.
Wow, you know quite a bit. Well, let me tell you, Nigeria is often referred to as a giant of Africa.
Right.
I remember when I was traveling years ago, right? And I was traveling, I was in Egypt, I mean, a youth hostel, and I was traveling with a Canadian guy or something, or an American guy, or something, and there's a Nigerian guy there. And the American guy said to the Nigerian guy, he said, where are you from? He said, Nigeria. He said, well, where's that? Nigeria? You not heard of Nigeria?
Yeah.
You not heard of Nigeria? Nigeria's accent, it seems very aggressive. It doesn't mean to be, but I think it is, yeah. You know? Nigeria, one of the biggest countries in Africa! Biggest country! Africa! He's almost shouting at him, you know? And I didn't realise that. So, I mean, I looked into it. But it is. They call it the giant of Africa. It's the biggest economy in Africa.
Yeah.
It's 186 million inhabitants. 186 million. That's nuts, isn't it? And seventh most populous country in the world.
The capital is Abuja.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it used to be Nigel, but they just, yeah.
No, it changed, did it? Right.
Abuja!
Nigeria is a country in its own right. I forgot that.
That's right, yeah. Nigeria
is a different country. Yeah, okay.
But anyway, they're expanding in Nigeria. Right. That's happening. That's happening with way education. So, you know, they've got these massive exposures, China and Nigeria. Nigeria! Can I pack a car there?
What?
I don't know, it's a thing I remember someone saying about. There's a lot of Nigerian, apparently, parking attendants in London. You cannot pack a car there! You cannot pack a car there! And they sound very aggressive. Like, they don't mean to be, that's an accent. Excuse me, sir! You cannot pack a car there! Okay.
I'm not sure where this conversation's going.
Anyway,
okay.
What I'm saying is, where education, growing market, you know, online education, growing market, doing very well in this country, and this, the revenue and all that's coming from this country pretty much, I'd say about 80% of it, but, and that's expanding, but they have these exposures in Nigeria and China, and of course, you know, biggest economy in Africa, second biggest economy in the world, and of course, what they have is the English language, English, you know, curriculum, and that is quite a, it's an international language, isn't it, English, so they're also, in those countries, they are teaching English as a foreign language, you know, so they're teaching English as Spanish. Yeah. Also, there was a comedian who said that a while back. I heard him say it. It always made me laugh. He says, "Oh, hi there. Before I started stand up, I taught English as a foreign language. Yes, I taught it as Spanish." That was kind of that. Steve likes that as well, sounds of it. But anyway, so I like it. It's generating cash. It's big. It's a steady grower. And they've been sold off massively. The last placing, right, was at 22 pence. They raised 5 million back in November 2017 at 22 pence. Most of with institutional investors. It's now, what, 9 pence? So 8 pence. So, you know, you can see that there's a seller in there, I think. That's the trouble. I didn't know this. I think there's a seller in there. And so that's why the share price has taken a hit. They've also had David Massey, who was the chairman and founder, so stepped down to do ill health. But I'm, yeah. But one quite encouraged by is the person who stood in CEO at the moment was the founder of the two core businesses anyway that Way Education bought and acquired. So she knows her stuff, and she's and they call it Way because it's the Way Valley. It's based, the headquarters in Crickhowell. In Cricowl, which I went to a couple of weeks back, Cricowl in Wales, near Brecon. See?
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah, I know.
But, it's got a headquarters in London, but it's got an office in London, but it started off in Cricowl. So that's that. Yeah, so I like that. And what are the companies looking at? Yeah, so Brave Bison, again, listen, they've confirmed they are generating cash. That's a good thing. As a Tuple, for example, they've reiterated they're going to be profitable. No confirmation yet. So you have to put these on different levels of risk and reward, you know. Have you seen Infrastrata? That's momentum in that's phenomenal. Literally, I've three bagged Infrastrata now. I did sell half when I was 250% up, but it's always like, you know, that thing you regret after you sell, and it keeps rising.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
But I'm it's a lot. I'm going to forget about that and hold on forever now because I've de-risked. It's not a problem. Any stocks? Any stuff you saw this week, guys? Any news you saw this week that you can cover stocks wise?
Steve,
over to Steve with the man with the long hair, big ears, man at the back with the ear lip.
No, Steve. I'm going to be honest, I've not been looking at my shares or stocks at all really this week. I've been kind of burying my head a little bit.
In the sand.
Yeah.
I think it'll get better, Steve. I think, listen, if it...
Trump, no, I'm sure it is, Trump, but that's why I'm burying my head at the moment. Yeah, I'm just not really interested.
Don't bury it too deep, Steve. You may die, all right? How deep are you burying it? Just up to your ears or...?
Yeah, about there, you know, a foot under.
A foot under, okay.
Yeah. Okay.
In the garden, so next to the neighbour, Steve's in the garden, you know, he's in a headstand with his head in the yeah, so our new neighbour there, Steve.
Yeah. Value for stocks.
Yeah, he's in the stock market, you can tell. What we do is judge the stock market on Steve and how deep his head is buried into his garden. Literally, you should have seen him in December. He was literally... Yeah.
When you lost him.
We saw his toes. That's it. But it's not so bad now. You can see he's just up to his eyebrows. It's not too bad. So it's getting better. that's a stock market indicator. Steve buried in his garden. It's a very good...
Not that I hold anymore, but Europa had an odd big rise earlier in the week, I noticed.
Yeah,
you still hold them, Steve?
Yeah.
Well, I didn't understand what that was all about, why that was.
But do you know what? This is the whole market, though. You get so oversold. It gets to the stage where, you know, you look at European metals, it was like, what, sub 3 million market cap, wasn't it? Getting closer to almost 2 million. And you realise the project they've got, there's a decent project, but the fear is so great in the market that no one steps in to buy. And all of a sudden, a little change in sentiment, people start buying. Everyone has sold that can sell, who want to sell. Everyone else is going to, and all of a sudden you get this violent snapback, realizing, hang on, it's reverting to mean a little bit because, and that's all it is. You push so low, it's like a suppressed spring, isn't it? It's like a pendulum effect, goes one way so far and it comes back. And someone said to me, you know, what's your thoughts in Europe? I said, a cracking project in Spain. They've got high unemployment, they need work in an area that's, you know, conducive to mining. You know, it can chuck off free cash flow. Yes, they've got to get, they probably need short term funding. I mean, you know, the market has to unfreeze a little bit, and so that's the problem. You've got this spiral, and you almost self-feeling spiral of worry about funding. It'll happen, you know, it'll get done, and it'll go forward. Let's be honest.
I don't know enough about how the trading systems work and whatever, but the way it kind of slingshotted back, is that to do with computer-driven kind of...
I don't know at that level. No, the small caps and micro caps, no. I mean, there's been the algorithms are more on bigger caps. But, I mean, a lot of it to do with, you know, market makers will mark them down massively, you know? They love this market. They love this market. They mark them down a bit because and they can take, you know, and then mark them up and sort of sell them. Yeah, so I don't know what's going on. There's a lot of talk.
My second theory was like it's either a sort of non-human thing or it is a conspiracy theory, you know, a bunch of people, whoever, that to kind of create this situation. I don't know, because it just the way it kind of rose, I went like 50% in a day, didn't it?
70%.
On no news or no, you know, nothing else, it just suddenly slingshotted back. So you sort of go, what's going on there? That's not very natural.
No, you're right.
I don't know enough about how that works. But
I just think, I think it's, I don't know, market makers taking advantage of people's worry and fear and realising, you know, sell out, people will sell out, they will just pick up some stock here. Because that happens a lot. They'll sell out, if the buyers, they'll push it. And so they will. Obviously, nice to see United on a gas rising towards 5p again above the 200-day moving average, of course, getting closer towards the colder drill. And like I said, we should head to... I just think it's one of the most undervalued companies, oil and gas companies. They are... You know, it's almost like saying, if you wanted to... If Coulter goes well, this company will go nuts, I think. I really do, because they've now got two bits of production going on, and they've got some high-impact stuff as well. And they are, for all intents and purposes, a hedged play on the oil sector. For a small cap, I think they've got a lot of potential and a lot of options. So it's a one, you know, trick pony there. It's several ponies doing several different tricks. So yes, this is one pony here, just one trick. I've got a couple of ponies over here. But they're cheap as well. They're not, you know, you buy the one trick pony, you're paying. But pay a bit more, you can get a couple of ponies to do lots of different tricks. What would you go for? You know, a couple of ponies. What do you go for? 8 ponies, do lots of different tricks, or 1 pony, it is one trick, and also is a bit temperamental.
Steve?
Oh, me, okay.
What the heck is going on there?
I think you dropped out, Justin.
Oh, did I drop out? I thought I was happened. I thought, right. I thought, I know some of my analogies get a bit odd, but it couldn't have flummoxed you that much. I said, anyway, it was a question about one-trick ponies, that's all, and several trick ponies. But, I mean...
Well,
What should you go for? A one-trick pony or 8 ponies that can do several tricks?
No, you go for one pony because you don't have to feed them as much and less hassle, less maintenance. Deals.
I bet
that one trick is fantastic, though.
No, I would go for 8.
Yeah, well, as I say, if you're in the circus with one trick pony or 8 trick ponies, you know, I think you get more return for your buck from 8 trick ponies. If I got Steve's one trick pony, or I got Pete's, you know, multiple trick ponies, I'm going to see the show that has Pete's multiple trick ponies.
But my one trick pony does more than his 8 tricks.
No, he's one trick. You come here, he does one trick.
One trick is worth more than 8 tricks.
It's a one trick pony, Steve. It does, and that's a card trick. And then Pete's ponies are doing lots of different tricks. Card tricks, jumping around, handstands, headstands, you know. And that, to me, is the seller, you know.
That's it. There we are, Steve. So you've backed the wrong horse, Steve.
But also, what I'm saying is, if you worry about, listen, we got this is the odds on. Do you know what? Did you watch? In fact, I tweeted this. Worth watching. You know, I go on the treadmill every morning, 40 minutes running, no problem at all.
Yes.
I do that. I'm literally finished by 7 o'clock, right?
Good.
In the morning. But I'm always looking for things to look for, you know, on TV. And I don't know why Louis Theroux come up on my radar, but there's some old Louis Theroux, you know? And I watched one in Vegas, gambling. Did you ever see that back in the day? Yeah. It's really worth watching because you've got some really sad people there just gambling. And there's a lady there. She's a retired doctor. You know, I don't know you, all right? Big glasses, right? Sounds like Mickey Mouse a bit. But she sat next to her. She's a slot queen. She's done $4 million in slots in the last 4 years, right? That's how much she's done. And she just puts them in. And Louis says, sits down, you know, in his little, you know, warm, awkward style, says, is there any skill to this? And she went, any what? He went, skill. No, you just have to keep gambling. and I thought, the stock market, different. I mean, the people are, you know, going for like high impact drills on the stock market, odds against. That's gambling. You know, that's gambling. You can't sway the odds in your favour. The only way you can do that is by, you know, applying little exposure to it, you know, really ramping down your exposure. That's gambling odds against. Now, this Coulter drill is odds on, you know, it's 58%. Yeah. It's not so massive.
Remind me, Coulter impacts United Oil and Gas and Upland as well, doesn't it?
No, Upland is Wick. That's up north. Really? So the same drill rig.
That was it. Yeah, sorry.
Yeah. So there's a company called Boyle as well. Barron Oil and Gas are in two of them.
Yeah.
There's Andlass, which is in Coulter, and there Andlass serves Upland. Corallian is the operator of both. They're not a listed company, of Wick and Coulter. But Wick is being done at the moment. That's Upland Resources there involved as well. That's being drilled at the moment, and then it'll come. The rig will come down south to Coulter. And I think it's just odds on. And with any investment, you should look at, you know, odds on. How do you put odds on favourite? How do you get an odds on company? We look at companies generating, you know, good numbers, you know, that's not priced in. You look at things like net asset value, look at the balance sheets. You know, that's how you get your odds on your side. With gambling, it's not. It's odds against. So the longer you spend at the table in a casino, the more chances are you going to lose, you know, because the odds are in the house's favour. There's a guy there called the Mattress King. And they bring him in. He's one of the high rollers, and you know, he has special services, comps. They give him, you know, complimentary stuff. The room was, I think, it was the biggest suite in America. They gave him in the Hilton. Phenomenal. He just goes down there. He did about $350,000 in a weekend, and you could see he wasn't feeling good. And just checking money, he was literally, and then he went at the slots last 10 minutes before he was leaving. He had a private jet, and literally, he had $100 bills or something ridiculous, feeding 3 slot machines, not even looking at the results. I mean, what's the point of that? What is the point of that? Absolutely destroying. I think there are people desperately need money, you know, in the world, and you were giving away, just throwing money. I just ridiculous. I hated it. And I just, it was teaching you one thing. It's like, that guy, he was trying to put a brave face on it when he left, but you see, he'd felt washed out. You know, he'd felt really bad by the end of the weekend. But, you know, try and put the odds on your favour. And even if that's looking at a chart, seeing where is the price relative to where it has been. If it's right at top right and it's been going like crazy for the last 2 days, there's a good chance it's going to come back. You know, that's the probability is. Just work on numbers, odds, and that's, you know, just, you know, that's all. Like gambling.
Yes.
Anyway.
No, I'm going to watch. Those Louis Theroux ones are good. I've watched them in the past. There's quite a lot that I haven't watched. So,
did you see Bross? Did you see the Bross documentary?
Oh, yeah. How funny
was that? I genuinely thought it was a spoof. I genuinely thought they were spoofing out. Matt Goss.
Any new ones, then?
No, Matt Goss. No, Matt, no,
this has been a not, this is separate.
Yeah, Bross.
Louis Theroux on Bross.
No, this is just Bross. So this is them coming back together, Steve, after they haven't spoken to each other for like 20 years, the brothers, or something ridiculous. Luke and Matt, they don't get on with each other. Matt's doing very well in Las Vegas, doing a sort of a crooner's sort of thing. And Luke is doing film and stuff. But they come back together, the documentary decided to put them back together to do a tour, or to do a one-off show, or a couple of shows in the O2, I think it was, or one show. But literally, the arguments they had were phenomenal. They're shouting each other.
But also, the mad thing I thought was that, like, they flew back to like Heathrow or Gatwick, or whatever, and there's fans there waiting for Matt. Now, if that's staged or whatever, I don't know. But
no, it'd be staged for documentaries, wouldn't it? Yeah.
Well, no, they're telling them about it. They're telling them about it. I think they contacted their fan groups and saying, "Listen, you're still fans. Matt's going back in. They're doing a revival gigs, and they're flying. They're probably giving them all the heads up. But those people, you know." Bross are massive.
Even giving people the heads up and people are still turning up. I mean, you know, people are still fans 20, 30 years on turning up to see them at an airport.
But Steve, you've got to watch it because Matt Goss comes out with some, you think analogies on this this podcast and that's, listen to some what he says. He says, and he's so cheesy, unbelievable, he's in a world of his own. He'll say things like, what did he say? Thing about superstition, of Stevie Wonder, he says, I'm not superstitious?
No, it's thanks to Stevie Wonder that I made a conscious decision not to be superstitious.
He says things like that all the time, And he says, I see a guy sweeping the road, he's my king. That guy's my king, he's my king. I treat him like a king because he's doing the job I don't have to do. So he's a king to me. And he says, he says, before the documentary, there was 15 one-way streets. That's all it was with me and Luke. But you've changed us one-way streets, and he blathered on about nothing. And then he said, you've brought two plants together, man. When you bring two plants together, two things happen. Either you explode or you create a genesis. And, you know, it's really cheesy and really serious. He's been very serious. And I thought he was going to break down and laugh at one point, but it just didn't. It carries on. But, it's, you know, they get back together. But it's worth watching.
It doesn't allow arguments in this house.
In my house, I don't allow arguments. I don't allow arguments in this house. I don't want bad vibes. So if you want an argument in this house, you go outside. Luke, Matt, you'd have a fight, wouldn't you? So it's ridiculous.
It's pretty much David Brent esque, isn't it?
It's good,
but it's actually genuine.
Do you remember years ago we brought him back? I think you were still working at the radio station, just when we brought him back as a Party in the Park, like revival host, and like he came on and just none of the crowd reacted to him at all. It's just like, who is this guy?
I know, but there's still enough fans to fill the O2, which is like they did.
I know.
Wow.
And also, you know, quite a lot of them are quite rabid, aren't they? Sort of, you know, frantic and nuts, crazy fans. Like the woman there at the airport, she was like, close to 50, and asked them to sign her chest just above her breast. And thinking, that's classy. That's very classy there. Can you imagine seeing, you know, as a teenager now, seeing your mother have that done? Matt, can you just draw it above my breast? There you are. So anyway, that's it. Oh, by the way, do you want to hear a dirty punt I've had? A company of dirty punt. I've given you a heads up. I don't know if you've taken, jumped in with me.
Have you? Okay.
I don't take dirty punts.
Oh. Okay. Well, you mentioned it on the WhatsApp group, and then
didn't say anything.
You didn't say anything else.
No, I didn't. It's a dirty punt. That's why I haven't gone public with it. I feel a bit ashamed of it, really. But this is...
Okay. What is it?
They are a £600,000 market cap, right?
Wow.
They reported cash in November of £700,000, November the 9th, in their finals. They're burning about 100 grand a month, so they're going to last enough cash in about June, right?
Yeah, and then they'll go pop.
Well, no. Mobile streams, they call, right? MOS. Now, they do little games... mobile games, and then they pay for it by adverts running either side of the games, right? So, a couple of years back, they were turning over 12 million. Right? Their main market was Argentina, right? Argentina, if you know anything about Argentina, it's collapsed. The economy literally has imploded. They devalued the peso. Everything that's gone wrong with the economy, even the president or the prime minister or whatever she was voted out due to corruption. You know, it's all gone wrong for them. That was their major market. Luckily, a couple of years ago, they started diversifying into India. Now, India's a big market, you know, massive market. And I think this is how bad it's been. In their finals, their revenue in Argentina halved pretty much. But they say in their finals, 6 months ago their finals was, it was end of June, that it stabilised Argentina. And 80% of the revenue comes from Argentina still, you know, but it's stabilised there, and they are seem to be getting traction in India. And I quite like him. I mean, listen, the CEO pays himself 230 grand a year, right? They're valued at 600,000. And I think, what? Okay, that may have been justified when you were turning over 12 million, you know, but not now when you lose. They lost £1 million a year, so, and so. But what I like about this is that they're valued to go bust, pretty much, you know. But I think they're getting traction because, and this company spikes like crazy on news. So in 2017, Latin America, Argentina accounted for 91% of group sales. 2018, accounted for 81%. So Asia accounted for 7% in 2017, but 18% last year. So sales in Asia has increased by 36%. Latin America's gone down by 52%. But what you understand is, at what point has sales stopped falling off Argentina and are they getting traction in India? And I think they're getting traction, right? Because they said, in spite of challenges posed in the mobile market in India, there's three players now. There's been a lot of consolidation. One of the new players that's come in is the fastest growing telecoms company in the world. They're adding 10 million users a month. Mobile Streams have just done a deal with them to use their store, their games, right? So that's quite exciting. They've also just signed up with a billing carrier for India's state's billing carrier, sort of telecoms operator. So they say, in spite of the challenges, revenues continue to increase quarter by quarter in India. Meanwhile, margin has improved and our marketing strategy has aligned more with those of key local competitors. So they say the partnership promises positive shift in the company's fortunes as the market has been revolutionized in the telecom market. But Yeah, so they also say revenue stabilised, growth, the subscriber base in India in order to increase revenue. So they're looking for profitability in India. The company's key objective is India, basically. But I like the fact, if you look at, there's two articles, right? And the growth of, it's called Reliance Jio. That's an odd name, I know, for a mobile. But they also got their own smartphone, this company. They're run by a multi-billionaire. But it's the fastest growing telecoms group. Vodafone Ideal is a company that's number one, but they are losing ground and losing money. And another one I can't remember. But the third biggest is Reliance Jio. It's growing, it's profitable, and this company is just going to deal with them. So I think they're going to start, I think they're, you know, their revenue is going to start growing substantially. And the fact they're going to deal with the Indian telecoms operator for billing via bills, so it's cashless pretty much. Mm. I think we're going to see it too. And what I'm saying is, they're valued at $600,000. That's all. That's all. And this is the kind of company that can honestly do a five-bagger in a day. That's what I believe. And it'll be worth $3 million, which is their turnover. And it can happen. That's why I've had a dirty punt on it. It's hard to buy stock, literally, because $600,000, it's hard to get out if you want to sell. But you do see, if you look at the chart, massive spikes. But it's one of those things, literally, are the fortunes... This company... Listen... All the bad news, I believe, I'm not sure, is out there. You know, it's been priced into this company. And when someone said to me, yeah, this CEO is paying himself $230,000 a year, that's like half the value of the company nearly, but he's got 30% of the stock. And to me, right, I don't think he'll go under because he's getting a cracking wage. He's got, 13% of the stock. If he needs to fundraise a couple hundred grand, I'm sure he can do it himself. And I'm sure he would to prevent the company going under because he's paying himself $230,000 a year anyway. You know, but I think, I mean, they've had no problems getting places away. But I think it's a dirty stock. People punt it and they pump it.
It's a business that's making a loss and he's paying himself 200 and something grand a year.
Exactly. He's lost £1 million last year. So, you know, literally, he is accountable for almost over two months worth of losses, you know, so pretty much.
Yeah. So well, it's an interesting one. Steve.
But listen, it's a kind of, look at the chart. Even on that news about Reliance Jio, it went up... 30%, but it's people sell it, people buy it, sell it straight away because they realize it's not a viable business long term. I'm of the conviction, and it's a silly thing to say, I think it may have turned a corner. And if that's the case, I think, you know, we can see it being, you know, valued a lot higher than this. India's a massive market, a phenomenal big market. If they gain traction in India, it's a lot better than Argentina anyway. And even though Argentina still makes up about 80% of their revenues, that's changing. That dynamic is changing quickly, I think. So can India take up the slack of where Argentina's dropped off? We'll see. But we are now 6 months on from the last final set of results where India accounted for, 18% of the revenue. But anyway, yes. Any questions? I've got to shift. I've got to do the swim lesson with my kid. He's teaching me to swim.
Yeah. Fair enough. I'm all out.
Yeah, me too.
So it's called mobile streams. It's a dirty punt.
I've got all my questions.
It's a dirty punt. It's very risky. Do your own research. Yeah. I've got a little bit, I got a toehold in there, but I'm not convinced anyway whatsoever that there's a turnaround business yet. But okay. early signs are that it's all the negativity is out there. You know, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah. Okay.
Nothing on this podcast is investment advice. They're all ideas. Most of them are terrible ideas. All right, just put that in. Just think of it like that. People, I've had someone come on to me recently again saying, "Oh, you should, vet who comes on the podcast." I've done my company. I said, "Well, no." I said, "It's not for me to do. We got a law saying they have to abide by certain rules. Companies come on, you have to do your own research. It's information. Is information right? Is it biased or not? That is your due diligence. That's what you have to do."
Yep. Yeah.
Anyway, bye boys. Bye boys.
Anyway, yes. Bye. Good to chat. Bye. Okay, bye bye. Bye bye.
Have a nice weekend.
The Weekend Podcast on Vox Markets with Justin, Peter and Steve. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.